Dad.
Welcome to Hungry Dad's guided tour through the delicate and often overwhelming balancing act between food indulgences and social acceptance. And now, as always, here are your hosts, Rod Budget and Hugh Gallen.
Hello and welcome to this week's show. I'm Hugh Gallen.
I'm Rod Budget.
And I'm going to kick things off this week with a segment I'd like to call Snacks and the City. And what Snacks and the City is, I'm here in New York City, and I think that there are potentially some unique snacking and eating scenarios for the city environment, for an urban environment. And the one I want to talk about in my first Snacks and the City segment is a true passion of mine, a joy that I have, and one of the great benefits that I experience living here in a city, and it's walking and eating. I don't know about you, Rod, but I mean, I did not grow up here in New York or in a city. I grew up kind of in a more rural type area, and walking and eating is not necessarily something that I ever did that much growing up before I moved here. How about you? Was walking and eating something that you kind of have some history with?
Similar to you, I grew up in the suburbs / rural area, and no, honestly, I mean, maybe as a kid eating a snow cone, walking down the street, or ice cream from the ice cream man, you know, it wasn't integrated into my life in any way. And I think it's something that takes some practice and experience and, you know, is enjoyable. And I know it's a big passion of yours, so I'm really eager to hear about it.
Yeah, it's something that is been a unique experience since I've moved here to the city, and I'm just going to kick right off with one of the most prime walking and eating habits that I practice, and it's the ability to go into a place while you're walking down the street and get a slice of pizza, a single slice of pizza, and just eat it on a whim. It's not a thought out thing. It's not necessarily for a meal. Walking and eating a slice is kind of, it's not just enjoyable because it's a slice of pizza. It, to me, it almost feels cool. Like, I'm not a smoker and I don't condone smoking, but one can't deny that smoking kind of looks cool and maybe feels cool to do. I feel cool when I'm walking down the street eating a slice of pizza.
And I'm sure you look cool. I think it's almost a New York institution, you know, having the slice of pizza, folding it over, walking, eating. The problem that I've had when I was in New York is inevitably the valley of death when you fold the pizza in two, all the grease runs to the middle, and as you tilt it up to eat it, or if you tilt it backwards like an amateur, the grease will drip down and inevitably ruin one shirt. I don't want to know how much clothing I've ruined with the valley of death grease from the pizza.
I have a potentially controversial solution to that problem. Maybe not everyone would agree with it, but for me, it works perfectly, and it's simply this. I get my slice cold. I do not have them warm up my slice. Here in New York, you go to a pizza place, and they've got the pizzas, or the pies, as they're called around here, already made, and then they're already sliced, and they put a slice in the oven for you to warm it up, and then you take it. I always just say, I'll take it just like that, give it to me cold. And what cold really means room temperature. It's not refrigerated.
Now, is this specifically due to the walking and eating? You know, given your druthers, would you have it warmed up, or do you literally prefer it room temperature?
I could not possibly back the logic of this, but in my mind, if I warm up the slice, it's a meal. If I get the slice cold, it's just a snack.
There you have it, folks. That is, I think that's official.
I say that with authority. I cannot begin to defend the logic beyond that. If I had my druthers, I would have it warmed up if I'm getting it as a meal. But if it's just a snack, I want it cold. I mean, I think that goes back to, I mean, even in my youth, we'd have pizza, like at my house, frozen pizza, or maybe we'd have it ordered in, and leftover pizza would go to the fridge and then get snacked on. So I think I do have a sense, just habitually, instinctually, that cold pizza is for snacks and hot pizza is for meals.
Yeah, it makes sense. I enjoy a cold slice every once in a while. I spent 12 years in New York City and never once considered that maybe I shouldn't get the pizza heated up. You know, subsequently, I've ruined a lot of shirts with the valley of death dripping down on me. So I think you're onto something there for sure.
I've got to give full credit to my wife, who is the first person who was brave enough to just, when first time we went for a slice, she said, "Oh, I like mine cold." And I said, "You can do that?" And she looked at me like I was an idiot. It never occurred to me that you could do that. She doesn't snack on pizza like I do. She, like most people, actually eats it as a meal, but she'll eat it cold. But her strategy, I ended up being able to employ into the walking and eating with great success, because you're absolutely right. Before I came up with this strategy, I definitely would ruin shirts. The only thing I can think is that I think at one time I figured out I could say just a little bit warm, not too hot. And that would kind of give me the balancing act, but...
Right, but then you run into, like, you know, everybody's definition of warm is different, and they're busy places, and they're going to forget and still heat it up too much. I think it's interesting that you've taken her strategy and somehow twisted it into your own little, hey, it's just a snack world, whereas her strategy really had nothing to do with meal versus snack, but you've somehow made it into, hey, it's just a snack because it wasn't cooked.
Yeah, I'm a resourceful guy. I'll take any idea I can to elevate my snacking strategies. The one thing I'll throw out there is I am hesitant to get anything more than a plain slice under this strategy for a couple reasons. Number one, once you start putting toppings on it, again, I think it starts to elevate from a snack to a meal. And I'm not looking for a meal. This slice of pizza I'm getting might just be something I'm grabbing between point A and point B, or something I'm grabbing on my way home for dinner. To me, a slice of pizza doesn't necessarily ruin dinner.
No, it's an appetizer.
The second reason is I am not getting it heated up, and these slices with meat and other things on them sit out. And I do, at least, maybe correctly or not, I'm no scientist, but I do think the heating must kill some of the nasty little buggers, the germs that might sit on the food. And I've had enough experience with a plain slice to know that being cold and unheated doesn't end up reacting with my body. But something with meat on it, I feel like there's a decent chance that it is not warm.
Yeah, you don't know with some, especially more of the specialty meat pizzas. You notice in New York City, the pies are sitting kind of off in the corner. Like, to get a slice, the guy has to, like, climb over other pizzas to even get to it. So that thing could have been up there since, you know, 3 months ago.
The walking and eating of all types, but particularly with the pizza, not only does it feel cool, it feels productive. It feels like I'm getting things done. Maybe it is just a snack, but I also know that I'm getting something substantive where if I'm not going to catch my next meal, I'm good to go. It's a very simple thing to get. In New York, you can usually be in and out of a place with a slice of pizza in your hand within a minute, which is just a very efficient and productive and nice way to go about life here.
I think it's also a confident look. You're walking confidently down the street. You're eating. You're efficient. You're burning calories as you're consuming them. It's just all sorts of efficiencies there.
Absolutely. I've experimented with other types of walking and eating, and I think pizza is about the most substantive thing I can come across. I did a mild experiment, and I only call it an experiment now. I ordered fried chicken last week in the city, and I had somewhere to be. And I had it in my head that maybe I could walk and eat with this fried chicken, and it just didn't work. I ended up having to stop, sit at a bench, and eat it, which was totally fine. But I can confirm that I could not pull off fried chicken in the same way that I could a slice. I suppose fast food, I've definitely pulled that off. You get a burger, maybe some fries. In fact, come to think of it, I walked across town with Five Guys just last week, you know, really without missing a beat. The only thing I'd say is getting that Five Guys burger took a lot longer than the slice of pie.
Right. It's probably, that moves it into a meal category, I would think.
To speak of less substantive walking and eating experiences, when I lived in Brooklyn, where I don't live there anymore, I kind of had a standard run with my commute. I'd come up from my subway, and right there outside the subway were two bodegas. And I think I've mentioned a bodega here on the podcast before, but for those of you who might not know, a bodega is essentially a little store that sells newspapers, magazines, snack foods, candy, soda, things like that. Sometimes a little bit more, but like definitely not a grocery store or even a food mart, but a little corner spot. I always made sure that I had a dollar in my pocket, and with that dollar, I could devise different snacking menu items. And this is what was available to me on a daily basis with a dollar. There were 25-cent little boxes of Lemonheads, 25-cent small bags of chips and 50-cent oatmeal cream pies, chocolate chip cookies, or granola bars. And I used to pretty much mix and match every day with my dollar with one of those various things. And I had a very good system where I could go in, I'd make my picks, and...
It sounds like a Price is Right pricing game.
Whatever the sweet item was would go right in my pocket, not for very long. The chips, oftentimes two bags of two different flavors, would be opened, combined into one of the two bags, and then crunched up a little bit so that as I was walking, I could drink the chips. There was a garbage can outside the bodega where the first bag went. By the time I got a block and a half, the second bag was pretty much drank and emptied. I could pitch it in that garbage can. And then I could go into my pocket for my lemon heads or my chocolate chip cookie or my cream pie or my granola bar. That was my dessert. I was able to have that done by the time I got two more blocks. Garbage can right there. I was able to go pick up my daughter from daycare. Had what I consider a very solid snack for $1, and the evidence was completely obliterated.
So how often did you mix it up versus kind of going with a consistent, I have my dollar, I know what I'm getting routine?
I'd say my most common routine was two bags of 25-cent chips and one chocolate chip cookie. This is an oatmeal, a Little Debbie chocolate chip cookie, like a soft with cream in the middle type cookie.
And the quarter chips, are those off-brand chips or just really small bags? Because that's quite a price. That's amazing. Are these Honduran chips that are shipped in to New York City?
This was a local brand called Wise Potato Chips. That's as good as anything around here. We know Wise. They had, your standard flavors. Now, there weren't a lot in there, but between the two bags, once you mix them together, it definitely had, I'd say, the volume of what you might expect from a 50-cent bag. And the great benefit was that you could mix the flavors. They had 50-cent bags as well. In fact, they had small 50-cent bags of Doritos. Great, delicious brands. But when you're in for a 50-cent bag, that's just one flavor. I was able to get cheese curls and potato chips, or barbecue and tortilla chips.
It sounds like you're making some pretty cool creations there.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed, mixing it up. And to drink them, I had to employ the strategy of crunching them up. And once I was going so far as crunching them up, it was important to me to crunch them up together to try to create a new taste sensation.
Hungry Dent.
All right. So for my segment in relation to Hugh's kind of snacks in the city segment, since I have moved to the suburbs, I'm going to call this Snacks in the Suburbs because that's how creative and groundbreaking I am. So I think the suburban equivalent of walking and eating is pretty obviously driving and eating. So I want to talk about driving and eating in a little more detail later, but the precursor to driving and eating is the drive-thru. When I lived in New York City, the drive-thru was really never employed. I didn't have a car. Most restaurants in the city don't even have a drive-thru, but now that I'm in the suburbs, it's pretty much a staple of, everyday life. So the drive-thru environment it's just a stressful environment. You're kind of in a hurry, or even if you're not in a hurry, there's kind of a feeling that you're around a lot of people, and there's uncertainty, and orders are taking a long time. So I want to give you my Rod Budget tips for the drive-through, kind of best practices for how to make your drive-through experience and everyone around you is the best it can be.
I think the drive-through, one of the reasons it's stressful, I think, is because you don't have any sense of what's going on inside that building, and you don't have a line of sight with the other patrons, and you don't have, unless you've been to this drive-thru several times, I find myself having little confidence in what's going to happen next, in how long I'm going to be waiting, and what I'm going to be getting.
There are a lot of unknowns. I mean, it's an unusual environment. You're in close quarters with people, but they're in their cars, so you're not really interacting, but people have their windows down to order, so you can kind of hear them and make eye contact. So it's a lot of people in close quarters, and there's potential for things to go wrong. It's a stressful environment, I think, mainly because the nature of the drive-through is it's supposed to be efficient, it's supposed to be quick, but like you said, there are a lot of unknowns. You don't know if they're going to get your order right. You have to kind of check it. So I think these tips will make everybody's lives a little bit easier. So number one, I don't know if you're familiar with this, Hugh. Have you seen the drive-thrus that now have the dual lane options where there will be an inside lane and an outside lane?
No, this is all new to me.
Yeah, you're still a New Yorker up there.
Interesting.
But yeah, a lot of, I think, not newer establishments, but maybe newer locations. I know the McDonald's near us has two lanes to choose from, promoted as any lane, anytime. I have been to some Chick-fil-A's that have two lanes. So if our listeners aren't familiar, basically it's like any other drive-through, but there are two boxes and two menus to drive through and
parallel to each other.
Yes, there's like an inside and an outside lane. So if you ever come upon a two-lane system and there is one person already occupying one lane and the other is open, I think it's perfectly acceptable to go to the other lane and do your thing. And if you're more efficient and order quicker and the other person's still waiting, you get to go in front of that person to the window to pay or pick up your food. And this is where a lot of the confusion comes in. And where I don't think the system works very well, but it might if people would be a little more civil. There'll probably be a lot of people who disagree with me on this, but I think if people are only using the one lane and say there are two or three cars in front of you, I don't think it's acceptable to kind of go to the open outside lane because people have chosen not to use it. I know it says any lane at any time, but I think the best thing to do is just go with a one-lane system because inevitably people are kind of jockeying for position and it gets confusing.
People go through the two speakers. Do they then merge back into one food pickup space?
That is correct. So right after you order into the two different speakers, you're merging back in. So maybe I probably didn't set it up properly for those who haven't seen this before, but that's where it gets really awkward is when you're merging back in with someone to pay and pick up your food. And, you know, if it's backed up, who knows who ordered first? Like, no one knows which order was taken first. I don't know how the workers know who to give which order to. I think they have some sort of system, but I've gotten the wrong order a couple of times, so maybe they're just guessing. So the merging back in's definitely, yeah, it's no good. Secondly, this one's way more straightforward and obvious, but be ready to order when you get to the speaker. In this day and age, everyone's menu is online. If it's a place you haven't been before, usually you've been to these places, so just make up your mind. If you have, you know, a van full of five kids, I'll give you a little bit more slack, but do your best to kind of write down the orders if possible instead of, you know, sitting up there and contemplating for 5 minutes while everybody else is waiting. Would you agree with that, Hugh, that you should have your order in mind when you pull up to the box?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much unforgivable to stare for too long. If you really don't know what's on the menu, then you shouldn't be going to the drive-thru at this place. You should
exactly
have a good sense. There's really two things that you're doing when you go to a place. There's either the standard menu items, which you should be pretty familiar with, or there's the specials. And the specials are given special advertising with big pictures. So if you decide to call an audible from your normal number three for a McRib or something, it shouldn't be a tough decision because you should be able to just see the McRib ad right there and call that audible.
There are large, colorful pictures to help everybody out.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think indecision at that moment is unforgivable. And, you know, look, even with, you know, you got the family and the kids, you should be preparing well before you get there with what everyone wants and lock them down. And last-minute changes really just aren't acceptable unless it can be done very efficiently.
Third, it's kind of related. Have your change ready. This has been lessened a little bit in recent years, more people paying with credit cards, which is great and very efficient. But, you know, don't be digging around your seat cushions or your drink holders trying to find exact change. If you don't have exact change, just get change from the teller. I've been behind a surprising amount of people who just sit there and you can see them. They're like digging around looking for quarters or pennies or nickels. It's not that important. Just just pay and be done with it.
Yeah, let the professional handle the change making. They've got a counter
exactly.
and a good field position and a cash register that is ergonomically created to pull change out of, and they've got all the options. So yes, let them make the change for you by all means.
They're experts. You're not. Fourth, prepare for the food. If you're with someone, the passenger should be getting the food. You just pass it through to them. If you're alone, you want to clean out those drink holders. There's always random stuff in there, but prepare those for the drinks. Otherwise, you're going to, you know, be trying to drive with one hand while you got the drinks. Just get the car ready to receive the food.
And one really should have plenty of time to do that while you're waiting for the food. In fact, again, I'll agree with you. There's no excuse not to do this, because while you're waiting, you should be anticipating that food and be getting ready for it, not just out of politeness to the people behind you or strategy, but out of excitement and anticipation. I mean, you want to be digging into that right away, not fumfering with drinks.
Yeah, there was really no excuse for any of these points aside from the mystery of the double lanes, which nobody knows how to use and many people don't know what it is. But all of these are pretty straightforward, common sense things, you would think, but time and again, I'm held up by these issues. So number five, this is more of a public awareness safety tip than efficiency, but be careful when you're pulling away from receiving your food. The first instinct is to reach in there and try to grab some fries and, you know, make sure everything's right. But this is a busy, busy parking lot area. I've seen fender benders as people are pulling away. You've got pedestrians. So I know the first instinct's to reach in for the fries and kind of take your eye off the road, but just have your head on a swivel. And as a follow-up to that, instead of reaching for the fries or the food, my preference, and I think it should be others, is to trap the heat. What you immediately want to do is take that bag and fold it down really tightly so that the heat does not escape. Assuming you're going home or on your way to the office and you'll be there in a reasonable amount of time and you aren't trying to kind of eat in the car, you're really going to need to trap that heat. It makes a big difference when you get home.
I don't think I could hold out. I pretty much, when I have that food within striking distance, I'm not waiting. That's just my personal inability to control myself.
Well, that's going to get to my next point / small segment to follow up to the drive-thru, is eating in the car as kind of the suburban comparison to eating and walking. It sounds like you're a fan, or at least, you know, you're prone to do it. But I think eating in the car is an absolutely miserable experience, especially juxtaposed against the awesomeness of eating and walking and the efficiencies. Eating in the car, first of all, it's dangerous. You're not concentrating.
It's true.
You might burn yourself. You might drop a beef patty in your midsection, and who knows what's going to happen after that. You're going to get grease on the wheel, on the gears. It's a messy, messy environment. Even if you're trying to eat with the wrapper as kind of your glove and you have a lot of napkins, believe me, you're going to have grease everywhere. It's just not enjoyable. It's stressful. You're not taking in the food and saying, hey, this tastes good. You're concentrating on driving. That being said, I did come up with a list of top fast food car foods.
This is good.
Yeah,
this is
our listeners out there, you know, I think these are doable. First of all, chicken nuggets. If you're a fan of chicken nuggets, they're pretty easy. You open the box, you kind of sit it next to you. You can reach in, you can take a nugget. If you don't use a dipping sauce, it's much, much easier. If you do need a sauce, then it's doable. It's still not as easy, but a naked chicken nugget is comparable to the cold pizza slice. It's very efficient. You just reach in, you grab it, you pop it in your mouth. I know a lot of people like the sauces, but
yeah, I gotta say, I think foregoing the sauce is foregoing perhaps the best part of the chicken nugget in my mind.
I don't even know what part of the chicken the nugget is, so there you go. I had to say it. Secondly, this might be a similar hang-up for you. I don't know, but fries are pretty easy. Again, if you want ketchup on them, it becomes significantly less simple. But I eat most of my fast food fries naked. If they're good fries, I prefer them sans ketchup. So a container of fries, they will get cold pretty quickly, whereas the nuggets retain their heat. But the fries, you can take a pretty big handful and pop them in, and it's pretty easy. And thirdly, small burgers, I think, are generally pretty easy. I'm not talking about, you know, a Big Mac would be too big, but, you know, like your standard cheeseburger at McDonald's or Wendy's or Burger King, they're small enough that you can one-hand it, you can palm it, you can take two bites and it's gone. So get several of the small burgers versus a big burger and you should be okay. So kind of juxtaposing the easy foods versus the worst car foods, I also came up with a few that I just absolutely recommend staying away from at all costs. Giant burgers being one of them. You know, you might be able to pull off a mid-sized quarter pounder type thing, but if you start getting into multiple stacks of meat and bacon and these things fall apart even when you're concentrating, it's just not going to work. It's going to end up all over you.
How would you qualify a Whopper? It's a single layer, but it's large from a two-dimensional space. My instinct is that it's manageable. It might be, for a large burger, I feel like it'd be manageable.
It's an interesting case of being right on that borderline. As I think about it, I mean, that's close. The Whopper usually has a lot of mayo and ketchup on it, I've found. So if you're not careful, that stuff's going to like kind of compress and squeeze out and drip down on you, which, depending on what you're wearing, may or may not be the end of the world.
Yeah, I think I could risk a Whopper.
You could risk a shirt for a Whopper. I think that's a fair trade. That's a Hungry Dad trade-off for sure. I think any sort of ice cream is challenging unless it's a milkshake. A sundae might seem doable, but when you get into spoons and trying to balance, you know, a scoop of sundae from that, wherever you're sitting it, to your mouth, it's very precarious. Obviously, an ice cream cone, you're just asking for tons of trouble. I would not recommend that under any circumstance. And the last one that I've tried before with varying degrees of success, it's doable but not advisable, is tacos. Specifically Taco Bell. It's tough. These, like the traditional small soft tacos, you can pull off if you keep them in the wrapper and kind of, I don't know, invert them and eat them with, but then all the toppings kind of sink down to the bottom. It's just not a good scene. So I would recommend staying away from tacos as well.
Yeah, I agree. It doesn't seem worth it.
My only other point with kind of the driving and eating is something that you alluded to, drinking chips earlier in your walking and eating segment. And drinking chips is something I've done from time to time in the car, usually with okay results. But this actually happened to me 3 days ago as I got to the bottom of a bag of chips. You know, you get the crumbs where it becomes necessary to drink, not just kind of a joy. But I got to the end and I was drinking them and had to tilt them up pretty dramatically, you know, to a 180 degree angle almost, you know. And one of the chip shards went into my eye as I was driving. And it was quite painful, not just from the pointed edge of the chip, but there were obviously salt and... I believe I was eating sour cream and onion, so yeah, there was some sour cream and onion residue in the eye. So just, you know, another word of advice, a public service to our listeners out there. If you're going to drink the chips in the car, which I think is perfectly acceptable if you're careful, just when you get down to the end there.
I think a couple taps on the bottom of the bag to really jostle it and get it all to the same corner could be a step that'll keep that shard from flying out of an unexpected position and into your eye.
Yeah, I think that's what happened. I think I had a shard that was hiding in the top corner versus the bottom corner.
You gotta flick that corner and loosen it.
I did not flip the corner, folks. Hungry Dads! Visit our website at hungrydads.com. Follow us on Twitter at hungry_dads. This has been a Hungry Dads production.
So I remember as a kid going to the bank with my mom, and there was a drive-through at the bank. Now with ATMs, I don't even think this gets done anymore, or maybe it does. But there were two lanes, and they put the canister like, and it came up and down.
Yeah, you put the canister in the ground, and it magically appeared. Which,
right.
As an aside, was the funnest thing ever as a kid.
Yes, it was very exciting, and I remember learning that it went underground and thinking that was pretty cool. Now, does fast food travel underground in a canister in the second lane?
I'm pretty sure that's where we're going with this. Yes.
Oh, wow.
No, it's a similar setup.
I got pretty excited. I thought this was amazing.
You really thought? I thought you were trying to make a joke.
I didn't really know, actually.
We're definitely leaving this in.
That's how clueless I am here in New York City. I have no idea what really happens out there.
I would be going to the second lane constantly if that were the case.